Well, from what I know about national parks, I've heard that they're, like, protected pieces of land that we actually, like, pay for as, like, taxpayers to have reserved from the government. I've heard that we're trying to get rid of them, but I'm not exactly sure if that's, like, an actual legal point or not, but I hope that it's not, because it would be a tragic loss. I haven't been to national park yet, but I would absolutely be interested in going to one.
And how come you haven't been to a national park?
At the moment, my family has been not available for travel, so it's been kind of difficult to go, but I would absolutely, like, enjoy it.
The national parks are the ultimate experience with nature. If you want to enjoy the great outdoors, it will require some planning, since the most popular ones, Zion, Yellowstone, Yosemite, and the Grand Canyon, are mostly out west. Last summer, I did visit the Grand Canyon to get the ultimate experience in Mother Nature, along with some bragging rights. According to Science Kids, it is considered one of the seven wonders of the natural world. Native Americans have been living there for thousands of years and continue to do so, and is visited by 5 million people every year. Many young people who are distance away or even nearby may not have the opportunity to ever see this natural beauty. What can be done to allow students from around the country to see this majestic place, and will it require traveling time and money? I spoke to Grand Canyon staff members to find out how they use distance learning and other resources to bring the great outdoors to classrooms nationwide. I'm Miss Mack, and this is Hall Pass Break.
So my name is Vanessa Ceja Cervantes, and I am the Centennial Community Outreach Coordinator with the Office of Communications here at Grand Canyon. I actually started off working with interpretation right after college and got really interested in, you know, working with the media, working with, you know, our gateway communities, our tourism offices, and so that's how I jumped over to the Office of Communications.
And what did you do before this? Did you do something else?
So I was in school. So I just graduated from Dickinson College out Pennsylvania. I majored in environmental science and got a minor in Chinese and Spanish. So, yeah.
You came all the way from Pennsylvania out here?
Well, I'm actually from Los Angeles. So it's been a lot of back and forth. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. So I'm making my way back to the West Coast.
Okay. Home.
Yeah. Yeah.
And my name is Amala Posey, and I'm the Distance Learning and Youth Coordinator here at Grand Canyon. And I actually started here when I was 20 years old as a student at Northern Arizona University here in Flagstaff. And I worked my summers for six seasons until I finally became a permanent employee here. But it's been a pleasure to do frontline interpretation and then to move over into the education realm. I went back to school for a master's in elementary education so I could help with curriculum development. And then now we help create and lead curriculum-based programs K through 12 for students or learners of all ages across the country and the world, because through distance learning, we can connect with you know, countries all over and to bring Grand Canyon straight into their backyards.
And did you, like, start off doing this, or was this something that you gradually came into?
I learned everything as I went, as most of us do, yeah. You know, because coming in as a 20-year-old, I did not really know anything about anything that I was doing, and it's a little overwhelming, because when you first start working here, you have to learn about the ecology, the geology, the human history, and so doing those frontline interpretive programs, helping to tell the stories of the park to all our visitors, that's how most of us get started. And then what's really nice about the Park Service is that there's always opportunities for growth. And through time, I just got into different positions and helped develop the distance learning program and then now developing a youth program. So it's just lots of learning. It's like we're in school still because we learn something new every day.
And just to explain to people that you are not volunteers, because they do have volunteers here, but you are here. Well, tell me more about how long you're here for.
Yeah, we're full-time staff here, so we live here year-round. We do have a lot of volunteers throughout the National Park Service. In fact, we wouldn't run without a lot of those VIPs. But there's a handful of us, you know, if you see the green and gray, we're either seasonal employees who do a lot of the majority of the work during our high season, or we're here year-round as program managers or running different special programs like Vanessa does, too.
And in regards to the education aspect, so you do distant learning, but I was looking at the website and I noticed that a lot of the curriculum is dealing with elementary and middle school students, but not really high school, and that's my specialty. Mm-hmm. So I'm a New York City educator. I've done teaching English and English as a second language for about like 10 years, mm-hmm. and I noticed that the curriculum doesn't really address for high school students. So can you tell me if you're working on that or what teachers can do to help with it?
Correct. Yeah, I sure can. And actually, I'm intrigued to see where you were because we have lots of programs for high schoolers. So I brought with me today this handout that has our curriculum-based programs in it. For geology, ecology, and human history, we have programs that are developed for K through 12. So there actually are a handful of programs for the older audience. Mm-hmm. In fact, a lot of these programs, we even have senior centers that call us and want to do, you know, similar things as well. But whether it's field trips, classroom visits, or distance learning, we have K through 12 programs developed for all of them. We have education specialists on staff who we all have master's degree in education, and so we actually develop the curriculum on site. We also work with a lot of local teachers. In fact, did you know that Grand Canyon National Park has the only K through 12 school inside the boundary? So we have worked with every grade level at Grand Canyon School to offer programs for each of them that aligns to their curriculum standards. They have beyond textbooks. When we look at Arizona State standards or even distance learning, we're looking at next generation science standards, national science standards, and Common Core just because we connect with so many states. So for instance, last year we connected with, we did 28 different states, we connected with 5 different countries, and we reached over 5,000 learners, K through 12, and actually a few senior centers too. But there's actually a lot out there. I encourage, you know, all teachers to go to our website and to look, whether it's a ranger visit, you know, of course I can't come to New York. we'd love to.
Yeah.
but that's why distance learning comes into play. But if you're here in the state, we can either come to you or you can come to us. We have travel grants that we provide for a lot of the schools here in the state. So coming as far south as the border of Mexico, kids are coming up every year to come here to Grand Canyon. And they're recognizing that this is nature's best classroom. You know, if you're learning about plate tectonics in the classroom, kids are reading about, they don't understand why it's important, why does it even, what does it mean to them? But you come to Grand Canyon, you realize it wouldn't be here without plate tectonics. So being able to put science into action, use the parks as these places that tell the stories, whether it's in a social studies class where you can, you know, if you're learning about Brown versus Board of Education, they do distance learning, connect with them and actually be right there in the school with the rangers to learn those stories and make it come to life.
See, that's bad on my part as a teacher. I didn't do my research, so thank you for clarifying that there is something there for high school students. I thought, I was like, Grand Canyon is so well-known, they have to have something for high school. So thank you for clarifying.
And you know what, though? Like, we know all teachers are so incredibly busy, so the more we can do to make it accessible to you and easy, you know, less steps of clicking. But this is what helps get the word out, you know, and then they visit that website or they give us a call, and then all of a sudden we can make those connections.
And can you just state that website so people know?
Yeah. So our main website is NPS, as in National Park Service, .gov/GRCA. So GRCA stands for Grand Canyon, /learn/education. And once you go into there, that's when we break it up because we have professional development opportunities, teacher workshops that we provide for teachers every year. You can find the section over the classroom visits if you just want someone to come to your classroom. You'll find a section on the field trips and distance learning. And then from there, you'll find a lot more information about our programs.
So when I go back to New York, I'm going to advocate for a Grand Canyon ranger to come to the classroom because we need you, so that way they can learn tectonic plates.
Right. Yeah.
But you did mention about the school that you have here. So how does that work? Tell me more about the school that's here in the Grand Canyon.
Yeah, so anyone who works here, you know, you have to basically work here to live here. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you think about, this is a community here, mm-hmm. just like it's a smaller community. But with this community, you have a lot of children here, and so we have about 300 kids, K through 12, that go to school here. We have about 35 teachers, and it's a wonderful relationship. We try so much to help these kids connect with Grand Canyon and to take the curriculum that they're learning in the classroom and to show that, like, if you want to focus on math, why don't we go over to the wastewater treatment plant and use real-life situations to build your curriculum, and then they learn about all the cool stuff that's going on in their backyard. And maybe they'll even be appreciative of the fact that they're growing up at Grand Canyon. You know, and you can imagine young kids are like, oh, whatever, you know, like there's a big hole in the ground over there. And you're like, no, like this is really a special opportunity for you.
I was going to say, like, little kids probably don't realize it. And teenagers, you know, it's like, okay, we're outside, whatever. So that is amazing to actually be able to say that you're in the classroom and then say, you know what, let's just take a walk. And let's go look outside.
In less than 5-minute walk, they're at the canyon rim.
And how do they do? I know they're state testing, right? So how do they do as a result of this? Do they do well with the test or?
Yeah, so it's Grand Canyon Unified School District. So they do have their own school district, just like the rest of the state, you know. And then K through 12, they have, you know, different testing scores, of course, but it's a good school. It's a great place to be able to raise your kids. I have a 1-year-old, and so it's kind of neat to think about finally being able to have a child that is going to grow up here and have this as her backyard.
That's beautiful. And that actually kind of goes into my other question with the impact the school has with the Grand Canyon and your partnership. So you actually have schools here, but then you have schools around. So what is the partnership with those schools, and how does it impact the classroom as well as with the actual park?
We are all about partnership, you know, and we want to reach out to every and any school out there who wants to be involved with us. And so there's a lot going on, you know. So in the wintertime, usually January and February, when there might be snow up here, that's when we then travel the state. And we'll have 1 to 2 rangers out at a time who are going into the classrooms. And in fact, this is good timing because on August 15th, we opened up registration. Mm-hmm. And so this is the time to go in and register because we will book up. We'll be completely full with all of the different facets of our programs. But some teachers enjoy actually using distance learning as a pre-program visit almost. Well, we'll first connect with them via distance learning, and then they'll either come here for a field trip or we'll go into the classroom. And so they're using, you know, we're trying to tie in directly with their curriculum. We understand that teachers are underpaid, overworked, and there's a lot of different, you know, standards that you have to meet. And if we don't meet you where you need us to be, we're no longer relevant to you. So we're creating the curriculum that's meeting your needs. And if it's not, that's when we update and change. And that's what's so nice about the partnership with our local school is that in the summertime, we actually try to hire local teachers who can help us with curriculum updates. And it's a great way for them to still get a little bit, you know, extra funding during the summertime. And then it strengthens our partnership. And the same thing with the teacher workshops that we offer, trying to get our curriculum into the classroom. Again, we're trying to just show like that real world meaning, the so what, that so many kids are like, why am I doing this and why do I care? And we feel pretty strongly that there's a lot of reasons to care. We just have to kind of help connect them to it.
And do you find that with kids and even the teachers, do they have a better appreciation for the national parks and just the environment in general?
Yeah. In fact, I have a perfect story for you. So there's this school that we've worked with for many years, 5 years in Howell, Michigan. And it started with just one teacher in fifth grade. And now all of the teachers in fifth grade sign up for this special program because in fifth grade, it's a big research year. And so what they've decided to research is the national parks. And we're seeing a lot of that where a lot of schools, they're creating these big research projects, connecting them to the national parks. So at the beginning of their unit, they connect with us via distance learning. We introduce the National Park Service, the history, how we came to be, the smallest, the biggest park, you know, all the different, you know, reasons that we're here, all the things that we protect. They then spend 3 months each researching a different national park. So each student in fifth grade spends, you know, about 3 months focusing on one of our big national parks. And at the end, they present out to us. And they actually present to their entire school. But here the rangers are like, all right, tell us what you learned. And I actually learned a lot about some of these other parks that I haven't been to yet. But what the success story is that these kids then beg their parents to take them to those parks that they studied. And to me, like, that's success. These kids fell in love with the parks through this, and they learned about this amazing place, and now they want to go see it. And it's the same idea where if you're doing a distance learning program with students in New York, they might be 1,000 miles away, but for the first time, maybe they see that arrowhead, and they're like, you know what? I actually know what that is now. I actually know what that represents. And when we connect with kids in the classroom, they're surrounded by national parks. They just may not know it. And so we're here to help them learn about what the parks protect, why they're important, and someday, it may not be next week, mm-hmm. they're going to be a steward. You know, just like me, when in fourth grade, I grew up camping in the parks. Did I know it? No. But I turned into a park ranger, so something turned out, right? Yeah. You know? But a lot of that, you know, we may not see immediate effects from things, but you know that it changes lives. And we also want people to know that, like, the parks are for them. Mm-hmm. These are for the public and the people. And they're also some of the most protected areas where science is really can... It can be done because this whole area hasn't been disturbed yet. You can get some of the best science out there in these parks and share it directly with the classroom. And that's great for teachers, too.
I think that's a good point that you raise, the exposure. And as a New York City educator, I am coming from a background where students, they are surrounded by concrete buildings. And yes, in New York State, we have beautiful parks, but for many of them, they probably don't get to see it. And a lot of them are from different countries too. So some of them probably have seen nature, but a lot of them have not. So mm-hmm. just trying, like you said, exposing mm-hmm. would be the first step, I think, to help them understand the importance of nature and just the park. Because even with them being in New York City and seeing the impact that buildings have, maybe they could reconsider, like, maybe we should have more parks. And in fact, there's a movement now for that with the different walkways and mm-hmm. different urban gardens, they call them mm-hmm. now, because people realize the importance of nature within even an urban environment. Mm-hmm. So I think you see that starting to really come through.
Yeah.
And as far as, oh, Vanessa, you want to say something?
No, the only thing I was going to say was something that came out of, so in 2016, we had that whole Find Your Park campaign. Mm-hmm. And something that came out of that research was that, you know, we have national parks and sites within 2 hours of every major city. And we also have these, you know, great urban parks as well. So definitely, I mean, a lot, because a lot of people, when they think national parks, they think of the big parks out west. But we have, I mean, within the National Park Service, we have 412 sites. And so whether that's a national park, a monument, a historic site, a battlefield. So there's a huge variety of areas that kids can visit. But yeah, it's always, I always like to bring it back to Find Your Park because I think it was a great, great way to tie those two things in.
And how many kids in New York realize the Statue of Liberty is a National Park mm-hmm. Service site, or mm-hmm. Ellis Island, or Gateway? Mm-hmm. They're surrounded by these special places, but again, they haven't made the connection mm-hmm. yet. And that's what's so special, especially now when we get to connect with these kids, where I actually, back in the studio here, and I'm happy to show it to you, I have a list of every state, and then when we connect with a school, we open it up, and I can tell them exactly what parks mm-hmm. are in their backyard. And it's just a little, you know, eye-opening, like, oh, I recreated that riverway every day, but I didn't realize it was a park.
So as far as the, you have Native American communities here on the mm-hmm. site, and one is the
Havasupe
Indian tribes. What's your connection to them, and how are you able to maintain your relationship with them on the park?
Mm-hmm. So the Havasupai live, so they're, you know, they live in the Grand Canyon. They don't live within the national park boundaries. They have their own reservation boundaries. And we, it's funny, so we think of all of these different nations having a relationship with Grand Canyon, and then, you know, they have a relationship with us. And that's something that we work, we have a tribal liaison program, and so our tribal liaison works with each of these 11 traditionally associated nations. And, you know, make sure that we're including them in what we're doing here in the park. A great example of that is our Desert View Intertribal Cultural Heritage Center that we're currently developing. So this would be a space for any representative of the 11 traditionally associated nations to come out, you know, share their work, talk about their relationship with the canyon, and just get that opportunity to, you know, for the public to learn about these very unique cultures.
As far as the Grand Canyon is concerned, a lot of people don't realize that it's actually two parts. There is the North Rim, and there's the South Rim. I went to the North Rim yesterday. It is
awesome.
Gorgeous.
Yes.
I mean,
yeah.
I took the drive up, and I felt like I was in an enchanted forest. There were bison.
Yeah.
I never encountered a bison in my life, and in fact, it crossed in front of my car, and I took a picture of it. It was amazing. But, you know, it's a gorgeous place, and you still get to see the canyons as well. But it's not heavily visited as the South Rim. Mm-hmm. So why is it that people tend to come here rather than the North Rim?
So what we see... First of all, so the South Rim has access to, you know, three of these major cities that a lot of our visitors come, you know, they'll either fly into Phoenix, Los Angeles, or Las Vegas. You can also get to the North Rim from Las Vegas, but usually people will come down to the South Rim. And that's just in terms of, you know, it's more accessible, it's closer to these different cities, so that's how we get that bulk of visitation. And then in addition to that, the North Rim is a seasonal area. So it's opened May 15th through October 15th. So that shorter time period, you know, less visitors get up there for that.
And it's also not as big. Is that also the
case? There's one lodge. Yeah, you may have noticed there's the Grand Canyon Lodge.
The services are a little bit different.
And it was actually, the North Rim was created to be more of a rustic historical area. And so they wanted to keep it small, you know. And so you're limited when you only have one lodge within the boundary of the park. There's one just directly outside of it, one an hour away. And then you're still driving almost 2 hours if you want to see more hotel options. So by having one hotel, you plan ahead, but you fill up and, you know, but it makes it of that more rustic, more personalized experience. And I am a little biased just because I started there when I was 20. I got married there because it's such a special place. But only 10% of our visitors go over there. You have to go out of your way to get there, plan in advance. And it's kind of neat to have this place all to yourself. And that's something special that the North Rim gives you. And I'm glad you got a chance to see it.
A lot of women of color don't know about any national parks on the west side of the country. Like, most women of color, you're either in the south or up north.
Why do you think that is? Like, why don't we know more about national parks?
Probably because we're not educated about it.
I think women of color don't come to national parks very often because I think it is kind of advertised as, like, a predominantly white activity. And I think sometimes women of color have higher standards and don't want to, you know, get dirty and just do all the work and just a little lazy. But money, don't want to spend money too. So I think definitely women of color need to branch out more and just see more of the world and the nature and just how beautiful it is and just put their guard down and all their standards that they're trying to live up to because they just need to live and just, you know, see more.
For kids who may not be engaged with nature and people who may not know anything about nature, why particularly is the Grand Canyon a place that everyone comes to all the time?
That's a great question. You know, I think for one, the mere size, 1.2 million acres, and that's just the national park. We're surrounded by tribal land. Mm-hmm. And then you think about the stories. This has been a home to people for 13,000 years, based on our evidence, probably longer. And so you think about, this is a home today and for people for thousands of years. The human history is so rich. And, you know, we need to know our history. We need to know where we came from. And we also need to recognize the people who are here far before us. You know, so the human history is like, wow, it's in your face, you know. And that's the thing that's special about Arizona, a dry, arid climate. We might need a lot more lotion. But all of our archaeological sites are perfectly preserved, which means that there's a lot left behind that allows us to see that evidence. It hasn't been destroyed by hundreds of winters. You know, and then you think about the geology. We have almost 2 billion years exposed of the Earth's, you know, crust. And so to see almost half of the Earth's history in one walk, if you hike to the bottom, that just doesn't happen. So part of it, and again, like whether it's a distance learning program or you're here in person, you can see the different rocks. You can learn about our Earth's history. And again, we can figure out that humans haven't been here that long when you think about that some of these fossils, literally our oldest rocks here were forming before oxygen existed on this planet. And I think sometimes we need to recognize that we're small and what the perspective is in this whole place, because we get so wrapped up in the daily, you know, everything that's going on and getting to work and our families and taking care of this and that, and we forget the big picture. And then you think about ecology here, we have 5 different ecosystems here. It's like hiking from Canada to Mexico in one trip from the highest elevations at the North Rim all the way to the bottom. Over 40% of the plants that you find in this entire state are all right here. So again, you think about the science, the things that we're studying, the things that we can learn in all of those facets, human history, geology, ecology, there is a lot of reasons to come here, and we just want folks to understand that no matter what you're interested in, and even if you're not interested in that, you know, like, come here to recreate, come here to hike, to camp. My first visit here was when I was 3 years old, and we camped at Mather Campground with some of my family. I'm from Tucson, Arizona. And I just think about, like, well, maybe that's how I ended up how I did, because my parents started taking me camping and hiking, you know, before I was even 1 year old. And I'm doing the same with my kid. So let's see how she turns out.
It's a good point that you mentioned in regards to, it's kind of like a generational thing. I notice a lot of people who come here, usually their family or families beforehand did that. But I think it would start in with the schools if we expose kids. Yes. And just getting them to go out and just appreciate that, because sometimes families can't do that. Yeah. And they're not aware of it. And it's no fault of their own, but that should be something that we as an education system should work toward.
Yeah, and more grants to get those kids on a bus. Yeah. And it's becoming harder and harder to afford, you know, a charter bus, because most school buses won't leave the district, so you're forcing teachers to look into charter companies. That's thousands of dollars. And it's amazing, like, the teachers we work with, they start fundraisers at the beginning of the year to get these kids here, and the kids earn it. You know, they do fundraisers, they're selling the pizzas, they're selling the ice cream, whatever it is, to get the money for them all to come here, and it's often their end-of-year reward that they spent all year trying to achieve. And I just think about, like, what our teachers do to help, you know, enhance these kids' lives and getting them up here, because it is harder and harder. But looking for those grant opportunities to get the kids here, to get them immersed, and just know that this is an option. We're here. You may have not noticed it, but guess what? We're not going anywhere. So you have the rest of your lives to come and visit.
And I also want to point that you talked about how the parks make you feel small, because in our society, we all can see that it's about the gravioso of who I am and how big I am. But I think that's a good point, that you start to realize yourself in terms of how small you are compared to this whole wide place. And it's a humbling experience, as it should be. And I think maybe that is something we should teach in our schools, is about being humble.
I love it. Yes. How to build character.
Yeah.
How to be a good person. Morals and values. You know, and that's what our teachers are teaching too, because you spend more time with our kids than we do as parents. Mm-hmm. And so even though you realize, like, the teachers can't do it all, but you are doing it all, you know, and that's what's pretty amazing to think about.
Yeah. And I think when you see national parks, you know, you also see them as places of healing and reflection. You know, and I think if we were able to instill that in our youth, that, you know, when they need a time to think, they can go to a national park or a national historic site and just reflect on that, you know, on our heritage. You know, like a place like Grand Canyon, you know, you get visitors from all over the world. It really just promotes the community of, you know, the type of area we have here. You know, visitors, you know, they don't really care where, you know, the person next to them is from, because they're all in awe of this, you know, very special place.
What do you hope that they take away from the Grand Canyon rather than just a selfie or the sunset that they see or the sunrise? Is there something more that you want your visitors to experience when they're here?
Yeah, so, you know, honestly, it's a lot of what we've been talking about. I hope that they walked away with some self-reflection. I hope that they found them a place for themselves here. Recognizing that, you know, these places belong to them. And of course I want that future, you know, steward. I'm hoping that, because the parks are in danger, and we want to make sure that we protect them and that there's someone that cares for generations to come to keep these places protected and to do nothing to harm, you know, where we're at and how hard we've worked to protect these amazing places. So, you know, for me, you know, as an educator, unless people are here and they see it and they understand it, they're not going to care and they're not going to take the next steps to be actively engaged in their communities. And we all have beautiful places in all of our states, and so maybe it is that big trip to a big park that reminds you, like, I've got beautiful wide open spaces in my own backyard. Maybe I should go to them. Maybe I should enjoy them. And let's remember how to take care of ourselves, because sometimes it is getting away from the city and just having a camping trip under the stars where we can reflect and remember who we are and what's most important in this world.
Yeah. And, you know, to go along with that, just hopefully that when they come out here to a park like Grand Canyon, that they're able to understand how interconnected they are with the environment. And, you know, the actions that they take, you know, do have an effect. You know, the Colorado River is one of the most threatened rivers in the United States. It provides water to a lot of the vegetation that is grown in California and Imperial Valley. It provides electricity to Los Angeles, Las Vegas, Phoenix. So understanding that they're part of something bigger, right, and that you can always be more mindful in what you do with regards to the environment, you know, and that you could do that together. You know, when you're out there at an overlook, you know, you have people from all over the world, and if you're all able to get that same message, you know, it's very powerful, and we have such a huge potential to be able to encourage people to live a little bit more mindfully.
The Grand Canyon may be a distance away for many people, but the national parks recognize this fact. Through grants, technology, and workshops, they are making sure teachers and students can be mindful about nature's presence. Hopefully, this will help people realize you may not have to travel so far to find your park. I would like to thank Vanessa Cejar Cervantes and Amala Posey for taking the time to talk with me about the work they do at Grand Canyon National Park. Music was done by Audio Binger, Late Night Feeler, and Chris Hagen. Be sure to check out the website, hallpassbreak.com, to learn more about my guests and Grand Canyon. You can listen to this and other episodes on iTunes and Google Play. And be sure to follow the show on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. To leave you off with a quote by naturalist author and early advocate for the preservation of the wilderness, John Muir, in every walk with nature, one receives far more than he seeks. Thanks for listening.